In a seed is as much memory as it is possibility, as much record as it is unknown. What we plant, the seeds we tend, set the promise of what's to come. What's the relationship between our stories of place, of home, and our grief? It seems that we can't find our way back into relationship, each of us, without facing what's been lost. This episode, we talked to Rowan White. We discussed the tiniest of time capsules, the seed, and the grief that we must feel to reconnect to their meaning. She leads us through an exploration of how living in place calls on us to acknowledge the vast tapestry of relationships that we've always been a part of. These relationships, in fact, birth us and mature us. To honor them is to be watered, to be grown, to be remembered. Rowan White is a seed keeper from the Mohawk community of Akwesasne and a passionate activist for Indigenous seed and food sovereignty. She's the educational director and the lead mentor of Sierra Seeds, and as a farmer, leader, writer, and storyteller, Rowan is deeply committed to a lifelong practice of embodied prayer. We hope you enjoy the episode. I feel so excited that you're here today with us on Finding Our Way. You are someone that I have just been paying attention to, learning from, following probably in the last 8 months or so, and I've been really struck by your work, what I think it has to teach us about where we might be headed and what kind of practice we need to be in to get there. So first, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast, or saying yes to the request. We're really happy to have you.
No, I feel so honored, Prentice. You know, I've been listening in on the first session and just the depth of the conversations and the medicine that you bring to us with your grounded presence is a real gift.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I have so many things that I want to ask you, but we will start at the first question, which is, if you were to look around right now and describe this moment, both where we currently are, the factors at play, the things that we might not want to nurture in this moment, and the things that we might want to build up, grow, nurture, what do you see from where you are?
You know, as an Indigenous woman in these times that we're living in, I see a lot of cultural insanity, you know, all around us, and the accumulation of that. You know, this insanity is really born from an accumulation of people not being able to grieve their sense of disconnection from place and from, you know, their ancestry. And how I like to speak about it is in this concept of a diaspora of disconnection. I don't think there's a single one of us here who is untouched by the grief of that disconnection of living in diaspora. I don't think we name it enough. I don't think we reckon with the fact that, you know, even the irony of me being a Mohawk woman, you know, on the continent of my ancestors, living in diaspora, you know, even though I'm actually living in place, but that, you know, diaspora can mean a lot of different things. And when I speak about this diaspora of disconnection, I think, you know, many of us, no matter what our ancestry is, by violence or trauma or any number of circumstances, have found ourselves very distanced and apart from the life ways of our ancestors. And there's a lot of accumulation of grief that comes with being disconnected. And I think that we don't have a cultural container given the, you know, the times that we're in and the confluence that we're at. I think we're all moving towards it. I think we're trying in our community organizing, but I think we're trying to find the right cultural container that can hold us so that we can do the grief work. You know, I often talk about the need to compost past failures in order to get to this place where we can really reckon with the cultural insanity of this current time that we're in. So that way we can really, I guess, settle in and ground into, I think, the work of our times, which is to create a culture of belonging that values diversity, that values our innate and beautiful differences, but at the same time giving us a real clear, deep taproot of understanding of who we are in the cosmology of this planet and the relationships mm-hmm. and the matrix of relationships that we're all held by. We oftentimes haven't been initiated into a deeper understanding of the significance of the relationships that we're all held by in this time. And that creates a certain amount of cultural insanity, which, you know, transmutes and transforms into the violence and the chaos that we're seeing in community at this time across the globe.
You know, this is a moment where some could say there's an incredible amount of connection. You and I are talking from across a couple thousand miles at this point. And we're always kind of tied in or looped into technology and communicating across that. And I hear you saying that we are reeling, or that we are in these diasporas of disconnection, that there's something that's happening to us on another level where there's a deeper disconnection. So I'm wondering if you can talk to, just from your perspective, the contradiction maybe between how connected or tied in we seem to be and this experience of collective disconnection that you're talking about.
Absolutely. You know, I think I can speak to it from my own embodied experience, but I imagine that through, you know, my own words, that other people might see themselves in that, which is that being born into this body as a Mohawk woman in this time, I've known what that means on the surface and sort of peripherally. You know, I've been informed that I'm, you know, the color of my skin and sort of like this external identity. And that makes me have an affinity to community members and other folks that are like me, or, you know, but I think in some ways, what does it mean to belong? What does it mean to have a sense of place and purpose? I think in this time of community organizing and connection, it's like we can sometimes have a very cerebral understanding of who we are, like, you know, our identities or the things that we write in our bio or the things that we, you know, sort of connect on common ground with people in our community. But I think what I'm inviting, or what I'm reckoning with myself, is what does it mean to feel truly at ease with who I am in place, and feel deeply, deeply connected, not only to my other human relatives, like the people who I'm in community with, but to feel like I have a connection to my ancestors and the way that what they went through informs and animates me, the way in which there is a multitude of relatives, seen and unseen, plant, human, mineral, spiritual, that are around me at all times, that I'm in a reciprocal relationship with, that I don't necessarily, even as an Indigenous woman who's fairly closely knit into my community of origin, that I still am trying to understand that cosmology and enliven it and have it be something living and dynamic, as opposed to just static and removed. And I think many of us, I would imagine that many of us have a sense of, you know, kind of who we are at the surface, but who are we in connection to the multitude of beings that allow us to be alive in this moment, and that deep storied web of understanding of who we are. I think that's what I'm speaking to when I say that grief of disconnection, because that's what culture does, is it weaves this tapestry of understanding and connection and relationship that we can then sort of stitch or knit ourselves into. And I think many of us maybe only have tattered shreds of that. And there's large lacunas or gaps or voids of information, of cultural information, and that can make us feel very disoriented and can make us feel, I think, a grief that a lot of us don't name, actually. I think it's something that kind of rides under the surface and compels us to go a mile a minute, or to be on social media a lot, or to have these kind of surface level connections. And I think where I'm imagining and what I pray is happening from the fruits of our work in community organizing is that we're doing the culture work, and we're deepening into people creating a greater sense of that deeper connection and relationship. And I guess generating or cultivating a cultural container that's never been seen before, that emerges yeah. from all those diasporas and you know, of disconnection into, you know, something that can feed and nourish and give life again. Because I feel like we've gotten to a place of disconnect, of that kind of deep disconnection, where we have a dominant culture that only knows how to take life and only knows how to sort of be extractive and exploitative. And mm-hmm. but I think we can turn that around if we're willing to do the deep spiritual and cultural work to create a cultural container that can actually give life and can make us be those, you know, can grow us into those humans that are worth descending from, that are good ancestors, that are responsible descendants. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. It's beautiful. When you were sharing about kind of knowing who we are and where we come from, I was thinking a lot this week about purpose and how one of the gifts of purpose, individual or collective purpose, is that it helps us set the standards of satisfaction for our own lives. And when we don't have a purpose, or we're not clear on what our purpose is, or maybe we're not listening to our purpose, that it's so easy to be influenced by other people's standards for life, what life is about, what life should do, it should take, it should be seen in these particular ways. But when you're grounded in your purpose, you're like, oh, these are the things that satisfy me. My work with seeds, or my work, you know, healing, or whatever the work is, we start to have standards for our own lives that are not externally dictated to us. So just thinking about how powerful that is. Absolutely. When we're able to recover that.
Yeah, we reclaiming that, because, you know, we have a larger voice that's telling us what it means to succeed or what it means to have a good life, you know. And when we can reclaim our agency in defining what it means to exactly. be, to succeed, like for me, that's very different. And I've had to reckon with that and decolonize or re-indigenize my understanding of what a good life means, as opposed to what the capitalist voice tells me a good life is.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. There's another thread that I want to pick up here that you offered. I'm curious your thoughts on how feeling this grief that you're mentioning. Can you make the connection more for me of how grief relates to belonging, how it helps us get there? I just felt really stirred by that offering.
Yeah, I guess I'll find my way into that through a story. So I come from a long line of people who were farmers, who connected to the land, and that connection was severed for a number of reasons, but most recent living memory was that my grandparents and my great-grandparents were taken away to Indian boarding schools and had their language and their culture, like, literally sort of beaten out of them. My grandmother was the last in our bloodlines to speak our Mohawk language as a first language, and that was taken from her. And at that moment in our bloodlines, that was sort of the traumatic event that disconnected us from planting and growing. But as a young girl, I always had an affinity. Everybody used to always say that I had an affinity. They would find me in the pantry, like getting into my mom's cornmeal and putting it all over my body, or, you know, getting out into, you know, the ground and bringing in bugs and all these things. And they were always saying, like, oh, that's your grandma Rena, or your great great grandma, you know, Annie, you know, coming through. And I found myself at 17 on an organic farm, just really curious about, you know, food and you know, how we nourish ourselves, and wanting to learn how food is grown. And I remember having a very visceral moment of unearthing this grief that you're asking about, which is that I was sitting on this dusty farmhouse floor in this New England farmhouse in Massachusetts on this farm. And my mentor had given me this box of seeds, and they were all tomato seeds of all different colors and shapes. And it was like, I was, you know, it was pleasure and joy and sensations of, like, complete, I don't know, just kind of inebriated by, like, the diversity that was in this box of something I'd never known about. And learning that each of these seeds had a lineage and connection to people and a connection to place. And, you know, just I have a very curious mind. And so that was like this doorway. And but then I began to think, I remember it's so visceral. I was sitting on that farmhouse floor. And I remember thinking, well, these people had seeds from their grandma that they carried across, mm-hmm. you know, sewed into their vestcoat pocket and came through mm-hmm. Ellis Island and, you know, and because they wanted a flavor of home, right? Because they wanted the taste of their grandma's kitchen, or even though they were far away from home, that little bundle of seeds would always be an umbilicus or always be a connection mm-hmm. to home. And I remember, I think equal to my joy and my excitement of discovering this connection between seeds and people, or rediscovering it, I guess, is that there was this undeniable feeling of grief and longing and sadness that I, as a Mohawk woman, had no idea what were the seeds and foods that fed my ancestors, that I had no recollection that was a cultural inheritance that was not handed down to me, that had been severed somewhere along the line. And that actually lit a fire inside of me, actually. And that grief actually ended up, grief takes lots of forms, right? Grief takes anger and rage, or, you know, sadness, or sometimes complacency. Like, there's a lot of ways in which grief emerges. But, you know, when I first kind of was allowing myself to feel that, the bitterness of that grief in that moment, I was able to, you know, as young people, as resilient humans do, we think, well, what am I going to do with this? Like, I'm sitting here with this understanding that there was something that should have been given to me that was my birthright that I don't have anymore, right? Then this connection to land, this connection to seed and food. And so I made a promise to myself at that moment, and I said, I'm going to find out, like, who are the foods that fed my ancestors? There was an anger, there was a rage, there was a fire that was lit in me at that point that said that they tried to take that from us, but I'm on this threshold of memory as a young woman, and I'm not going to let them take that from me. And so that was almost 25 years ago. And here I am still asking myself that same question, and still in that same arc of inquiry, in following those breadcrumbs, you know, home, so to speak. And so I say that story because I feel like if I hadn't felt that grief and longing, I don't think I would have the energy or the impetus or the catalyst to be able to go deep into my work that it's evolving into today, that it was that grief and that longing that kind of woke me up and said, that's something that I long and care for. And it was actually uncovering, and I get, maybe other folks can, or maybe you can relate, which is that it uncovered a hole or a longing inside myself that I didn't even know I missed it. You know, like it was naming something that I was missing that I didn't know I was missing. I didn't know that was even something that was possible to miss. But once I saw it, and then I said, oh, I have a wound there. I have a wound there. And probably that wound was one that my mother carried, and that my grandmother carried, and that her mother carried. And so what is it that I can do in this time to begin to soften that scar tissue, begin to soften that wound, and reweave myself back into that web of relationships. And that's where I feel like many of us, when you know, stitching together the grief and disconnection, is that, you know, many of us who live in this diaspora of deep disconnection can't even name or don't even know all of the things that were once our birthright, or were once, you know, sort of our cultural container that we're missing. And it's actually subconsciously creating like the chaos and pandemonium of these times. And so what if we have the courage to slowly, through these little doorways, like, maybe not everybody's going to find their way home through food and seed, but maybe some of us will. And maybe that will begin to soften that knot of that grief and that disconnection.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. That's so powerful for me. You shared that piece about being on the threshold of memory and the kind of agency and power in that declaration that I'm on the threshold of memory, so I choose now to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really struck me so deeply. And I often think about how the culture that we're kind of, I don't know how to talk about our relationship to it is, it feels like it's on top of us sometimes. And it feels like it does not want to remember. It does not want to look back. It does not want to do this grief work that you're talking about. It's a culture of denying impact, denying history, denying relationship even. So what you're saying about how grief, when you dropped into your grief, you also, this is my interpretation, you recovered some of the power that you had by feeling into that.
Yeah.
It's just really incredible and feels like such an important learning given how we can experience the dominant culture, the culture that is imposed on us. It just feels a powerful alternative. We could feel our grief. What might we recover in that?
Absolutely.
I want to ask you specifically about seeds here. And I think I want to enter into it. I've read you talk about the kind of intimate immensities of seeds and what they contain. And I wonder if you can talk to me about your seed work and talk to me about that framework of intimate immensities, because it is really striking to me. That offering.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think seeds carry so much, right? Like my world is very seed centric. Like I'm just so enamored and passionate about what a seed can carry. You know, a seed is it holds this memory across the ages, and is like an unwritten record of this co-evolutionary relationship between plants and humans and the elements and the land, all in this teeny little, you know, this compact little bundle, you know, this cosmic little bundle. And, you know, on so many levels, I mean, people can understand the depth of the metaphor of seed, but for those of us who have been blessed and honored to be seed keepers and to carry seed and to relate to seed and to witness them, you know, coming completely undone and, you know, transforming into these, like, you know, a handful of squash seeds will transform into this raucous field of vines and pollinators and, you know, all the things. I mean, that's like my church, right? Like, that's my temple. Like, that's the place where I just can fall in love with the earth all over again. You know, I'm in a practice, I name it often in my work, that I call reverent curiosity, which is really, it's practicing fascination. It's a deep spiritual practice of not taking for granted the, you know, that a tiny seed can then become a whole field and then be distilled back down to into these tiny seeds and the miracle of that. And so that's, I think, what I'm naming when I claim that they're intimate immensities, because they hold so much. I think we don't have enough reverence in our current sort of, like, you know, pop culture for that which animates us. Like, if you think about this, I just want to lean in for a second and get us to think about, like, that which the energy that that is inside of a seed that can crack its seed coat and roots can go down and these leaves can go up is the same energy that swells the lilac buds in the spring, and is the same essence that then turns that blossom into, you know, into beautiful beans or seeds. But it's the same essence that grew you in your mother's womb, right? It's the same life force and that same essence. And in our Mohawk language, we have a word for it that's, it's like the divine, you know, it has a feminine like verb root, but it's like this divine feminine energy that animates all of us, right? That animates us. And I think when we can begin to cultivate ourselves individually into humans that can honor and hold reverence for that, the immensity of that, the immensity that's held inside of a seed or inside of a bud, then we start to move ourselves closer to into being humans that can that can carry a lot more of what can seed the future. And I talk a lot about reseeding imagination. Like, I think we need to reseed ourselves as humans. I think we need to, in this time, we need to reckon with the fact that in each and every single one of our bodies holds living memory of our ancestors coming into agreements with plants and animals. And those agreements, or those covenants that our ancestors, you know, wove themselves into with plants, is that they said, we'll give up a little of our wildness. And the plants said, we'll give up a little of our wildness. And we would come together in this beautiful co-creation, and that we would promise to take care of each other. And there's a lot of humans on the earth right now who ate today. Like, a lot of people who are listening today, you ate today, right? And you have food in your body. And those plants never gave up on their agreement to you to take care of you and to nourish you. But a lot of us humans, whether it's by force or by choice, we've abdicated our relationship to seeds and to food in ways that I think spiral out into consequences I don't think we can even fully reckon with. And so, you know, when we talk about reseeding ourselves, reseeding people, is, you know, not everybody's going to be a farmer or a gardener, but we all have an ability to come back into a deeper understanding and a relationship with those foods and plants and beings who feed and nourish us every day. And I always say those agreements, they run like wild rivers in our blood and our bones. And there's all kinds of ways in which, in my work as a mentor, as somebody who cultivates seed literacy in my community and cultivates connection with, you know, hold space and so that people can cultivate a connection with the land and with seed again, is that I can often see the moment that those agreements start to become rehydrated in people. Mm. Like, there's a sparkle, there's a something where people say, oh yeah, I know that. I remember that. I can physically feel it in my body, that the body remembers. And that's why food and seed work is so powerful, because, you know, we humans were foolish bunch, right? Like, we oftentimes think that our brains can sort of get us out of any conundrum, but a lot of the times the ways in which our other senses, like outside of our thinking mind, like our multi-sensory capacity as humans, when we eat food and when we smell food cooking or when we taste food, it actually, those foods go inside of our body and they rehydrate old cellular ancestral memory that was laying dormant, that was latent in our bodies, and helps us to uncover and unearth a deeper sense of who we are. And so that's why in this work that we're doing with food sovereignty and using food as a catalyst or a vessel for healing that grief and that trauma, is that those foods go inside of ourselves and reconnect us to places inside of ourselves that we didn't even know existed. Like, they rehydrate the memories and ideas. I mean, because all of us know we've had that moment where we smell something and it's like conjures a memory, right? Like, it conjures this like deep old memory. And so that's the power of those intimate immensities, is that they encode so much that can be ingested and taken into our bodies. Even just being in the garden and having our hands in the soil and receiving their sensory messages that they carry to us is just profound healing. And I think in the work, we work in trauma-informed and impacted communities, and the capacity for this work to work with plants and land is one of the greatest catalysts to heal that intergenerational trauma than I think anything I've seen. I think I've seen the impact so deep and profound of people being able to shed literal generations of curses and cycles that I think, you know, it just, these plants and this practice of being in relationship to plants helps us to heal in a way that's much deeper than anything I've seen otherwise. So,
you know, in the healing work I do, and I know that you do, obviously healing work in an embodied way, that it's all embodied if we're aware of and feeling what it is that we're doing. It's really been important for me to think about my healing work and my embodiment work as a restoration of relationship, less so kind of fixing a body, which I think is the way that people have approached embodiment work, that, okay, we're going to work on your body so that you'll be fine. It's like, no, we are born also into relationships, and that is how we are expressed, how we become, that there are all these relationships that you're talking about beyond human, and that healing can't really be, there's all a lot of talk these days that I'm sure you've heard about healing, and it's so important, and it's something I'm committed to, and I think that we miss that we can't do it out of relationship with all that's around us. You can't just heal your individual body, that it's relationships that have to be healed and restored. So, I mean, I feel like you've spoken to this, but if there's anything you want to kind of add or lift up there, I'm just curious your thoughts.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, like it was told to me by elders of mine that, you know, the seeds have many things to gift us, right? Like they, you know, they grant us sustenance and nourishment, and there's all these gifts that they bring us, and how we understand it in our cosmology. But one of the gifts that they bring us is that they bring people together, right? Like historically and present day, you know, it takes a group of people to cultivate a field and to tend the earth. And when we have meals, like how much richer of an experience is it when, you know, we feast together, and the, you know, that the significance of feasting is that those seeds actually help stitch us together, because they recognize our interdependence, like as humans, and also our interdependence on, you know, the multitude of beings who hold us and surround us and are held. Like we live in the earth, we don't live on it. And in that earth, we're actually woven into this beautiful web of relationship. And I think the greatest insanity of this time is that people don't realize that, because, you know, anybody, no matter what your ideology is or, you know, your connection to the earth, you are held in that web of relationship if you are living and breathing and eating. But the insanity is that we don't recognize it, right? We can't even see that we're being held by all of these beings. And so what I think is so powerful is that with this seed and food work, and has been profoundly powerful for me in cultivating a sense of belonging, and is cultivating this culture of care where we work together and we restore these communal agreements, right? Like we have individual agreements. I spoke about them, of like that we feel them in our blood and our bones, and that we feel this reverence or this appreciation or gratitude for these foods and seed and connection to land. But we also carry them communally. And in my Mohawk culture, our whole ceremonial cycle, where we come together as a community to feed and nourish and give gratitude for all that is being gifted to us as humans, is the agricultural calendar. It's like not separate, you know, it's not separate from the seasonal calendar that of those foods and seeds that feed us. And so I think, again, speaking to the insanity of the times, is that we no longer have sort of a dominant cultural rhythm, or, you know, these life cycles aren't imbued into our culture where we have a collective way to honor, you know, the turning of the seasons, or honor a collective way of all the gifts that the seeds give us. Like all of us descend from people who had that. Like there's not a one of us who doesn't descend from people who at some point in their lineage comes from people who have rich cosmologies and stories that give them an understanding and a blueprint for how we can communally celebrate and uplift this gift and these relationships. And I think that's where I think the myth of self-sufficiency, like you have this whole movement of people who want to like get back to the land and to, you know, be self-sufficient. Well, I think I would, you know, I'm very quick to point that out and say, you can't, there's, that's a myth, actually, that that's one person on 40 acres or whatever the this idea is possible, because feeding and nourishing ourselves is actually a collective act, and it has to be, and it has to be a cooperative communal endeavor. And if we can reach back into our past and remember and rehydrate the things that informed our ancestors and those in our lineages, but then also remember that culture is a verb, right? Like culture is always changing and moving, that we can add together the collective intelligences and experiences of today and practice that radical imagination to imagine what does a relational foodscape look like in the future, and how do we build that? We're not going back. We're gathering our ancestral brilliance, right? That comes through all of us, but we're, you know, allowing that to create a confluence with what we hold today is true and moving forward. And that's where I think my commitment as a thought leader and as a seed keeper and a farmer is to use narrative and storytelling and like sensory ways that I think inspire or delight the senses, so that people can imagine and like taste and like just like this undeniable like pleasure infused like brilliant relational food system that's possible. And that's where Black, Indigenous, and bodies of culture who have a little bit closer proximity to those memories, we are the ones seeding that future, and we are the ones who need to be resourced to be able to seed that brilliant future through our radical imagination. And because what I'm seeing now in the food world is that there's a lot of traumatized people sort of, you know, just reconfiguring this like messed up system into new forms of harm, right? And so that's where I think those of us who are more closely in proximity with culture and community, we're always going to build systems that reflect us, which means that we're always going to cultivate solutions that are communal in nature, that are that recognize our interdependence, that recognize our interconnectedness. And until we get to that place where those folks are resourced and given, you know, the agency and empowered to do that, then I think we're always going to create a system that is based on exploitation and extraction and independence. And because that's what American agrarianism is based on, is rugged individualism, extraction and exploitation. It's stolen people on stolen land, you know, and just ad nauseum, you know, moving forward. And so I think, I mean, I have great faith, and I see in the last 20 years of me doing this work, the food sovereignty movement has just grown exponentially. I mean, even like the seed, I feel like it's kind of kerneling, like one seed turned into 100, and then it just keeps growing. Because who can deny the absolute beauty and brilliance of these foods and the way they make us feel, and the, you know, and the way that they, you know, help us to heal. And so I think there's this like movement continues to bubble up and grow. And so my prayer, the love poem that I make my life into, is that I will just want to resource those young people who are coming up who will, you know, like my children. I have two children, they're teenagers, and they've never not known the flavors of home, which are corn and beans and squash and sunflowers, and they've grown up on a seed farm. I didn't have that. But in just one generation, my children know that, and it's written on their heart. You know, it's written like into some place inside them that is like, nobody can ever take that away from them. And you know, to that end is that, you know, the colonizers, when they came here, they knew that we as Indigenous peoples resourced ourselves from the land, and that was where our true power resided. And that's why they very specifically manufactured their colonial tools to sever us from the land. And the same is true with Black, you know, enslaved people who were brought to this land too. It was the same colonial tool that was used. But here's the thing, is that which gives us life and power and spiritual power, they can never kill that. And it's always in the land. It's always there. Mm-hmm. It's always there, ready to invite us back home. And so if we remember that, if we can get a, if we can continue to reinforce that to as many of us who have the ears to be able to listen and to cultivate spaces where that's like can help us rehydrate that understanding, whether it's personal or communal, then we begin to tap back into that, like that true power that we have. It's not power over, it's not the dominion over, but it's a power that is, that recognizes interdependence and recognizes that we're held in that way. And so that's my prayer, is that we all can find our way into a relationship, whether it's a mentor or a community member or somebody. Like, I've apprenticed myself to plants. Like, those mm-hmm. have been my teachers, and I've been carried through a very unconventional rites of passage as a young woman into motherhood and eventually, you know, God's willing, into, you know, grandma, you know, grandmahood and being an older woman. They've carried me and initiated me through a very unconventional rites of passage, which helped me to understand what it means to be a modern Indigenous woman in my full spiritual and cultural capacity. And, you know, some people have humans who help them do that. I didn't. And so I did have amazing elders who helped me, but ultimately the plants, they held that and they said, well, now you have the seed and now you need to know how to grow it. And then now you know how to grow it. Do you know how to cook it? Like, okay, now I know how to cook it. Oh, now I have so much food, I don't know what to do with it. Okay, well, have a feast, you know? And like, that's, it's right, just all these layers that they just kind of help us to be human again.
Wow. Yeah. That is so beautiful, the way that the seed compels you into more and more relationship mm-hmm. And more learning. That's so powerful. I feel like that kind of points us in a direction of practice, I think, for everybody. How can we let that relationship with land, make us more human?
Indeed. And we're never too late, right? For instance, so no matter where you are at in your life cycle, that those beings, unseen and or seen, you know, the plants, the minerals, the animals, the land, they're always there waiting for you to come home, you know, and that whatever it is that invites you or inspires you to reconnect, whether it's finding a food of your ancestor, that, you know, that has some sort of cultural significance, and you begin to learn how to plant that or cook with it or, you know, engage in some sort of relationship, that it's never too late, you know, and we do the work that we can in this time, and then that will ripple out into, whether it's people in your community around you or your descendants, however, but it's never too late. And that we, in order, you know, to go back to that point of that threshold of memory, is that we are that generation
mm-hmm.
who can make renewed commitment to make that bundle of cultural inheritance, whatever it is, and even if there's just tattered rags and shards in there, we can make it a little bit more beautiful for those yet to come. And even if it's just a little contribution that we make it that much easier for the next generation to continue to heal and to find their way home. And that's what keeps me going. You know, if I try and look at the immensity of all the wounds that need to be healed and all the things that were taken, that will send you into a spiral of despair. But if you can find one thread, like for me, it was corn, like deeply, deeply relating to Corn Mother again, and to learn how to take care of her. And she's grown me in so many ways. Like that garden has grown me into the woman I am today, and I hope will continue to grow me into the grandmother that I hope to become. And, you know, it's just layers and layers that if we just start small, and that's the wisdom of the seed, is that they're so small. So you can just start small. You can just start with one seed or two seeds, and they'll continue to help grow us into good humans that can nourish and sustain and can be that, you know, that example of the innate abundance or generosity of the earth. Like we forget that in this time, is that, you know, the dominant narrative wants to tell us that there's not enough, but there's always enough. Like if you apprentice yourself to seeds, you will never, ever, ever doubt that the earth herself is benevolent and is ever generous and ever creative, and that we have that inside of us, that we're made of that same too. So thank you, Prentice, for opening up this space and allowing us to talk into these beautiful thoughts.
Thank you. I know we have to end, but I think I more want to share this with you. I grow some food now, but I think I started with growing years ago collard greens, because I'm from the South, mm-hmm. and I love collard greens, and I wanted to eat collard mm-hmm. greens at my house. So I started growing collard greens, and just the abundance of collard greens, like how they grow and grow, and they just keep offering and offering and offering, really was what pulled me into wanting to grow food, because I was like, oh, this is something I love, and I can just have it here at the house. And now we have, you know, some land where we're growing food. And the lesson this year has been, I think what you were sharing of like having community grow there together, having other folks come and grow and dig in together has been this year's lesson of like, oh, okay, we can't just do this alone. We have to do it in community has been such a gift. And the grief that you mentioned on top, I mean, I think as a Black person to feel the grief, the layers of grief, both the disconnection that has happened with this land, even though very recent ancestors had connection here, and then disconnection to the land where we were taken from, feeling that I was gardening recently and just had this flood of memory come in while I was bent over. And the message was, how do I not bend over in a way where I'm out of alignment in my own body in the way that I think my ancestors had to be because of the forces of exploitation? That I took a minute, I could almost just feel, oh, this is how you get forced into making this work and not making this life. So how do I be in my body in a way that a relationship reciprocity is possible with the land? So I feel so grateful for the lessons here that you are offering us. And so much is awakening in me, to be honest. It feels alive and what you're sharing, and it helps me know. And this is such a wonderful lesson, I think, maybe for all of us. It helps me know just how vast it all is and how much there is to keep learning and relating to, and not do that limiting scarcity thing. Like, no, creation is vast and you can sink into it and keep learning. So just grateful.
Exactly. Grateful. So grateful. Just to speak quickly to what you just said there, Prentice, which is that also in that moment when you were bent over and you were, you know, recognizing and centering and acknowledging, you know, whether it's, you know, those, that force, kind of getting into a correction, is that we also can reclaim our power in those actions. Like, I know a lot mm-hmm. of Black compadres say, well, we don't farm, or their, you know, family didn't farm because of the trauma when something like that is traumatic. But how do we reclaim it as an act of honor and sustaining our people and nourishing our people, and say this movement, this practice of growing food, I do the healing work to unhook it from the trauma and reclaim it as a pleasure practice, or as something that empowers me to reconnect to my ancestors, right? And that's deep, powerful work. And I just want to name and thank you for giving voice to that, because that's profound healing that you gift your you know, your community and your ancestors and your descendants. Right. Like, oh, it's good.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's time. It's time. We're doing it. It's time.
It is time. Indeed. Yeah. Well, thank you, Prentice.
Thank you, Eddie. Rowan. So grateful you're here. Thank you, Eddie. Finding Our Way is co-produced and edited by Eddie Hemphill, co-production and visual design by Devin Delania. Please make sure to rate, subscribe, and review wherever it is that you listen to this podcast. You can also find us on Instagram at Finding Our Way Podcast, or email us with questions, suggestions, or feedback at findingourwaypod@gmail.com. You can also help sustain the podcast by becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. You can find us on Patreon at Finding Our Way Podcast. Thank you for listening to Finding Our Way.